And now, a word from our sponsors.
The sciences on the DAT are very important, but you can't forget about the perceptual ability section.
Shapes can be hard, and that's why we've partnered with PAT Crusher to help you succeed.
These guys are legit. Their website is jam-packed with material, including 10 90-question practice exams and videos and strategy for every portion.
Their performance reports even let you see which parts of the PAT you need more work on.
What makes them so different is that their massive amounts of content are so affordable.
They even have an app so you can do PAT on the go.
Regular pricing is $9.99 for a month, $49.99 for 6 months, or $64.99 for 9 months.
But if you use our code PODCAST in all lowercase, you'll automatically get 50% off your order. Not 15, 50, half off.
So, don't delay. Crush the PAT with PAT Crusher.
What's up, everyone? This is your host, Marco.
And this is your host, Clayton.
And you're listening to the Pre-Dental Podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Boom.
That's the first time we've done it with a guest.
Right, yeah.
We've never been able to high five.
And we haven't done it on camera in a while either. We've just been getting lazy doing recordings.
Seriously, this is intimidating.
But what do we got going on here? What's going on?
We've got Dr. Esquivel on the show today. That's pretty exciting.
He's one of very exciting.
Our most awesome professors here at LSU.
How's it going, guys? I'm actually a fan of your little show. Eh? I told you last time. Yeah. I saw you guys on YouTube, and I was like, wow, that's pretty nice. I actually spent a good time watching and listening to you. So I was very familiar with with the high five in the beginning of the show.
Thank you so much for agreeing to be on the show. Hopefully it goes smoothly today. And
I'm sure it'll go more smooth than your incisor.
It was a canine.
That thing is, I told you guys, you know, no one to stop. But anyway.
So in one of our first classes in dental school is morphology. And Dr. Esquivel always gives this speech about when you're waxing, you just need to know when to stop. And I was like, I know, you know, it's going to be fine. Whenever I get it great, I'm going to stop. I'm not, you know, that's not who I am. I'm not a perfectionist. I'm good. We get to our first practical, and my canine, we're waxing up a canine, and it looks pretty good. And I said to myself, Clayton, that canine can look better. And so I took the pantyhose to it, and I started scrubbing it, and that canine broke straight in half with about 5 minutes left in the practical.
And by the way, the pantyhose to the tooth, that's a way that you smooth it out.
It was pretty dramatic, but it's a good story to tell now.
Yeah, I remember we were at 3B's and Clayton walks up and he goes, well, I snapped my tooth, and you know, we thought he was joking, but
it was not.
It was pretty serious about it.
I remember his face, he coming up to me, showing me the tooth, and I'm like, oh man.
Yeah.
Oh man, what did you do?
It was bad. It was bad.
But it's okay.
I made it through.
Yep.
Did
you learn?
I did.
What matters.
Not doing that again.
Polish the next tooth. Yep. So hard.
It was never polished ever again. So it's fun.
So, anyways, yeah. So Dr. Esquivel was our first professor at LSU School of Dentistry. Taught us everything that we know about teeth, the very basics from what is a tooth to
how many ridges and fissures and fosses and everything else.
All the crazy stuff.
All the marginal ridges and things I didn't even know teeth had. So it was a great experience.
Right. He also gives world-renowned lectures.
Yes.
Lecturing everywhere.
Check out his Instagram. It's insane.
Please check out the Instagram.
It's beautiful.
No. We just enjoy what we do. And on free time, we get to travel a little. Well, got to travel.
Yeah, got to. Used to.
Not much traveling.
From the bedroom to the office.
Yep.
On your
yep.
computer.
Exactly.
Yep,
so you said that that's what you do. What is it that you do?
What is it that I do? Monday through Friday?
Yeah.
Or Monday through Sunday?
Monday through Sunday.
Work. No, I'm just kidding. Monday through Friday, I come here at school, and I'm at school teaching from 8 to 5, seeing patients, working with residents, working with you all, which is what I really love to do. And, of course, then comes the other part of work, because it doesn't stop here. You know, being a faculty involves a little bit more than that 8 to 5 job, just like it is for a student.
Sure.
When you guys go to study, we go to prepare classes. I think as much as you owe respect to the classes. We owe respect to the classes as well, and we don't like to come unprepared.
Right.
So we spent some time working on that, and on the side, I do like to lecture quite a bit. I enjoy teaching. That's bottom line. I enjoy sharing my experiences, good and bad. Okay. But I guess that's the way we can make our profession grow. So it's a little bit of the professional responsibility. No, you just don't live off the profession, but you're supposed to make it grow, and hopefully 15, 20, 30 years down the road, somebody's going to say, these people were my teachers. Now it's my turn to pay it forward. So I do a lot of that, and of course spend time with my family, my girlfriend, my puppy, and then, right, you know, do all the fun stuff, of course, too. Try to stay positive. That's one of the things.
It's a big part of it. It's awesome.
That's one of the big things, I guess. So yeah. In a nutshell, that's basically what it is all about for me.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's a great mentality to have. So
it is.
So you're a prosthodontist, correct?
I'm a prosthodontist, yes.
What is a prosthodontist?
So a prosthodontist is a specialist in prosthetics, okay, which involves something as little as a single crown, okay, that sometimes it's a little bit more complex than your everyday crown, to a full mouth rehabilitation. That means making 28 crowns at a time, okay, or treating patients that need dental implant therapy or high-end aesthetics. So it's a little bit of everything. It's a very diverse specialty. I think it's changed over the years. Now we're getting a little bit more into surgery to a certain degree. So it's becoming more and more exciting. And with digital technology, it's just a broad spectrum of things that we really can do. So that's what we do. We fix complex cases for the most part.
That's awesome. I've always respected your work. And like we said earlier, his Instagram is insane. You take some amazing dental photography pictures.
Thank you.
It's really awesome, some of the pictures he takes. So if somebody wants to become a prosthodontist, what do they need to do? How do they get there?
Okay, so of course you got to go through dental school. Once you're done with dental school, we have a 3-year residency program, which you have to apply. There's certain things you have to do, you know, have good grades, good recommendation. Being someone that's hardworking and that is self-motivated, I think that's super important. And apply to a residency program, and we make interviews to people, and you know, try their hand skills, kind of know and rationalize how well they think, how good of critical thinkers they are, and then they come to a residence for 3 years.
That's awesome.
And what does that residency entail? So what are they, obviously they're learning, but what are they doing day-to-day life?
So a prosthodontic resident spends quite a large amount of time in the lab, okay? So one of the things that we take pride of is we say that we do a little bit more work behind the scenes than most people do, okay? So, and we learn a lot from that. It's amazing. You know, you learn so much from waxing. Yeah. Imagine having to wax 28 teeth at a time.
I've had nightmares about that, actually.
You know, that's what I used to think. And that's what a lot of people think. And same thing's going to happen to you guys with dentures, okay? Yeah, you're taking dentures right now.
Yeah, right.
And a lot of people say, you know what? Dentures are so hard. I don't really like them, until that one day that everything clicks. And when it clicks, it's like a magic wand just touched you, and everything just becomes awesome and super motivating. So it's motivating to sit down and wax a full mouth, because now you're not only thinking about, oh, how the anatomy looks, but how the whole system functions. Same thing for a denture. Now when you learn how to position those teeth in 3 dimensions, everything just becomes so much greater.
I'm waiting for that moment.
Yeah, I was thinking that the whole time. I was like, that magical boop.
Yeah,
it's gonna be an incredible.
It will. There's no doubt about it. I mean, sometimes it takes you a longer time than others. You know, it took me quite a bit. You know, I finished dental school and worked almost 5 years in private practice, and I was doing what I thought I liked, which was restorative. And one day I said, no, I want to go a little bit further than that, and then they said prosthodontics, that's what I want to do. came back to school, and it didn't click right away. It didn't. And clicked, let's say, well into my second year. That's when things started to fall in place,
right.
Second year of residency. And that's when I really started understanding a little bit more what I was in.
Right. Yeah. So you kind of alluded to it, that you were a general dentist for 5 years. What is your story? How did you get to become a prosthodontist?
So when I graduated dental school, well, it's a funny story, actually, before. When I was in dental school, I had a friend which was a professor of mine, right? He let me borrow a textbook, okay? And this textbook was a textbook of anterior restorations, okay? So, and I started reading it. I was always very curious and stuff. And I started reading this textbook and didn't pay much attention to, I mean, where the guy who wrote it was from or stuff like that. But I knew his name, right? So one day there was this lecture, a Friday afternoon at my dental school. And of course it was like around 5:30 or 6 p.m. And it was for students and faculty. And I was the only student there. It's a Friday afternoon, right?
Not surprised.
I could see that.
You know how that is.
Yeah.
So, long story short, this guy was talking about dental implants and talking about prosthodontics. And when the lecture finished, he was kind of curious that I was the only student there, right? He called me over and he said, "Hey, come here." And I said, "Hey, doctor, how are you doing? Thank you for lecturing to my professors and me, I guess." He asked me, "Do you like prosthodontics?" And I said, "You know, yes, I actually just finished reading a book." "Oh, really? What book was that?" And I said, "Oh, this anterior ceramic restorations by Gerard Sheesh." The doctor looks at me and starts smiling. And I'm like, "Doc, why are you smiling?" He says, "You know, that's my boss." And he said, "Do you like pros?" I said, "Yes." I said it again. "Would you be interested in coming to LSU?"
Oh,
and I
wow.
said,
"Holy
absolutely." I was a fourth year dental student. We had a 5 year program. So I was still in dental school. And at that moment, I did not have the money to come to school. So I set my target. And I said, "I'm going to go to LSU and I'm going to study prosthodontics." And 5 years later, that happened.
That is awesome. And that's one of the questions we actually had for you.
Yep.
How you ended up
so
in
that's,
LSU.
Yeah. And I'm a dentist because my dad was a dentist too. You know, he was an orthodontist, and that kind of drove me into the profession. You know, when I started dental school, I was not so sure in the beginning, and I had a rough time in the beginning. I really did, and for a moment, I did think I wanted to change career paths.
I feel that.
I know. I actually came and spoke to you about that.
Yep.
Midway through the first semester last year,
it
wasn't feeling it.
It's not something that's uncommon, I'd say. I mean, you're young, you're still not sure. I was coming straight out of high school, basically. I was very, very young when I started dental school. We don't go to college back home. We go straight into dental school. And can you imagine? I'm an 18-year-old kid, 19-year-old kid in dental school.
I cannot imagine.
And all I thought about was riding my bike, right?
Yeah.
But then I had a nice conversation with my father, which I'm never going to forget. And he said, "You know what? Just give it a chance. You're going to like it." And here I am 20 years later almost. And
oh, wow. Awesome.
And not only do I like dentistry, I never left school.
Stay here forever.
Yep. I guess
so you've been with LSU since your time in private practice.
So correct? I came here in 2010.
Okay.
For residency. I did 3 years of residency, 1 year of implant fellowship, surgical implant fellowship, and aesthetics, and then I started as a faculty in 2014.
Wow.
So it's been 6 years as a faculty, 10 years in the system.
Awesome. That is so cool.
Yeah, it's been a great ride.
And where did you go to dental school?
So I'm originally from Nicaragua, so I was trained in Nicaragua in a private dental school called Universidad Americana. It's a 5-year program. So back home, like I just mentioned a few minutes ago, we don't have to go to college to go to dental school. So we don't have prereqs.
That's nice.
So we receive a lot of these classes in that first year of dental school. That's why it's a 5-year program. Nevertheless, it's shorter.
Right.
So I went there and spent 5 years there, learned some stuff. When I graduated, I thought I knew everything, but you realize soon enough that there's a lot to learn in this profession. And then, like I said, then I decided to become a prosthodontist.
Right. So when you graduated dental school there to come here, did you have to do anything different, take any exams or anything like
so
that?
So part of the requirements, if you're foreign trained, you have to, of course, do national boards and all that stuff, which makes it a little bit hard because, of course, you have not taken those classes in a very, very long time.
Right.
So when I took part one of national boards, I had not taken biochemistry for like 10 years gross anatomy like for same amount of time, so it was a little bit tough. You have to, of course, apply, and it's competitive. You know, it's three residents a year, and I take pride in saying that LSU is a great prosthodontic school, and it's very well renowned and worldwide because of people that have set the path for us, former residents, former faculty, and stuff. I did have to do the. You do have to do the exams and everything, and then you have to validate everything. So it's a process.
That sounds like a long one.
But you know, it's. I can't complain. It's been great. Nothing but great.
So does LSU still take three residents per year?
So yes, LSU takes three residents per year. Like I said, it's a 3-year program. And the first year, you do a lot of learn how to do the lab stuff, start getting some screenings for your patients, hopefully selling some treatment plans, and get you working fast so you can take advantage of all the 3 years in our program.
And earlier you were talking about how you did a 1-year implant fellowship. So yes. I have two questions with that. So one, what all does that entail? I mean, implants obviously, but my second question is, you know, there's general dentists that do implants, there's oral surgeons that do implants, there's these other professions that do implants. So how does that differentiate between a prosthodontist or a different specialty?
So let me begin with my experience as an implant fellow. When this fellowship that I enrolled in is not open anymore, okay? It was a fellowship by prosthodontics, okay? In which prosthodontists got taught how to place implants and how to deal with more aesthetic cases on implants, okay? In that year, I basically learned surgery and little details, you know, the little pearls that you have to be immersed only in doing that to be able to catch.
Right.
It was a great experience. Nevertheless, we don't have it open anymore, but there's some other fellowships around. There is a restorative fellowship for implants here in school that is perio department's restorative fellowship, but we don't have a surgical fellowship anymore. For your question, Marco, how is it different to get treated by an oral surgeon, a periodontist, a general practitioner, and a prosthodontist? That is a very, very hard question, but I'm going to try to answer it the best way I can. I think each one of them have a different, let's call it charm, okay? It's ability, a different situation where you want to use each one of them. Let's talk with the oral surgeon. You worked for an oral surgeon before, right?
Correct.
And I think oral surgeons are particularly special because they're the closest to medicine for us dentists, right? So I would definitely, as a prosthodontist, not treat that medically compromised patient, for sure. That's not something I want to have to deal with because it's not something I'm an expert in. I don't want to treat that atrophic maxillary arch or atrophic mandible that needs huge bone grafting and stuff like that. That might not be something I want to do as a prosthodontist or restorative dentist in general,
right?
Perhaps that's something that an oral surgeon can tackle much better than we can, okay? Now, I'm going to go to the other surgical specialty, the periodontist. The periodontist, for me, is like the plastic surgeon of the mouth. That's my best description for it.
Interesting.
Okay?
Yeah.
It's the plastic surgeon of the mouth. They are the ones that pay attention to detail to that to the soft tissue, right? I'm talking minute detail. The way they suture is different to the way the oral surgeon sutures because there's two different type of treatment, right? So if I'm leaving this room right now and I trip on the stairs, and I bump, and I hit my central incisor, and I get it avulsed, and I need an implant in the aesthetic sector, and I'm a highly, highly, highly aesthetically conscious person, then I think a periodontist has that finesse to be able to treat that area and be able to deliver a result that is more according to that with implants. Not that a surgeon can't do it. Don't get me wrong. But I'm talking, that's what they're trained for. You know, they're trained for that microsurgery, for that connective tissue grafting, for that, you know, making that pink look beautiful. And I guess same. I mean, for the restorative dentist and the prosthodontist, that's a little bit harder, right? Because in the end, perhaps the prosthodontist is looking at the big picture, saying, "Okay, I'm going to place this implants here, 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 because in 5-10 years, I know what I'm going to convert this to." Maybe the general dentist does not want to get into more extensive therapy and wants to go with the basic, you know, single implant or two implant overdenture, or even a little bit more advanced than that, but maybe not to the scope restoratively that the prosthodontist wants to go to. Nevertheless, like I said, all of them have their charm. The general dentist is the one who gets to see the patient for the rest of their life and gets to develop that great relationship with the patient. You know, some other specialties, especially if you're a prosthodontist and you work in a referral-based practice, perhaps you see the patient, you treat them, and you send them back to the general practitioner to keep on taking care of that patient.
I like that. I don't think I've heard it broken down quite so good like that.
Said it was a hard question to answer.
Yeah, and you dove right into it. I thought that was good. So for the pre-dental, the dental students listening out there, what advice do you have for them right now?
In general, for a younger crowd?
Someone who wants to go to dental school.
Yeah.
Okay, so one very important thing that I think that is going to make a huge difference, I'm not even talking only pre-dental, I'm talking to you guys,
yeah,
dental
absolutely.
Students, and even is mentorship. Find a mentor. That is super important. It's crucial, okay? And I once read from a friend. He wrote somewhere. He said, see, your teachers are imposed to you. You cannot choose who your teachers are, but a mentor, you get to select. And when I talk about mentorship and I talk about finding a mentor, I often get asked, Dr. Esco, what is a mentor? And I always give them my first answer is, a mentor is someone you're not afraid to go and ask the dumbest question to and know that when you get answered back, you're going to be answered back with a lot of care, okay? And most importantly, without judgment, okay? Someone that really wants you to grow, okay? That can be a teacher, that can be a dentist you work for, a friend. It doesn't matter. Sometimes a mentor doesn't necessarily have to be someone in your profession, you know? You can find mentorship in any aspect of your life.
Right.
Any aspect of your life. And you can have multiple mentors, not only one mentor, but I think it's important for the pre-dental student to start looking for that. You know, if you all have your dentist you go to, you know, ask them. Ask them about the profession. What are the things that they like? What are the things that they dislike? Okay? What do they suggest you to do to have a good, less stressful life? Because that's another thing. We live in a stressful, you know, society in general.
Yeah, especially and, now.
Yeah, especially right now.
Especially now. So we got to find ways of not being stressed. And if coming to work is going to be stressful for you, is it going to be beneficial for you? I don't think it is. You know, if it's, I don't know if you remember, but I told you in your first lecture, I said, whoever's here because they want to make money, I think they're in the wrong profession. And it's not that you cannot make a good living. Yes, you can. But you're not supposed to be doing anything related to healthcare, at least, for the money. You do it because you care for people. Okay?
Right.
I think that being able to talk to someone that's experienced in the field to give you their insight can help you decide and make decisions wisely, as if you want to even be a dentist or not. You know, there's nothing more frustrating than doing something you don't like. I happen to love what I do. I mean, I really do. I look forward to Mondays. As crazy as that sounds, you know, I see people say, oh man, it's Monday. No, it's not. It's Monday. You know, it's, I think that's something that everybody should look for. And when you find it, it, in my opinion, it doesn't matter if that makes you $10 or $100,000.
Right.
Because the money will come on its own. The as long as you do what you're doing and you're happy, you can be, I don't know, you can have like the job that has the least interesting description and the lowest quote-unquote wage, and you can make a good living out of it. Because if you do things right, if you do things because you really love doing them, I think success comes on its own. It really does follow you.
And I think it really shows how much you love your job, because you came in teaching us D1 students, and we could just tell how much you love your job by how much you put into your PowerPoints and how much, I mean, you wax still. Like, he'll probably go home tonight and wax. I mean, it's just crazy how much work you put into it. So it just makes us appreciate it so much more, you know, that you're still working at it. You're still trying to be the best that you can.
One of my mentors told me once, and this is something that is, I'll take forever, and he says, you're supposed to lead by example. I cannot ask my student to work if I'm not working. I cannot ask them behave if I'm not behaving. I cannot ask them, you know, study if I'm not studying. I think it'd be lacking respect for the student also. And I think that's something he taught me that is very, 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 very important. And for me, I mean, I've learned, like I said, from him and from many others, little things that have made me want to pass forward, okay? Few things. One thing is, I know I like to say, you're supposed to motivate, not intimidate, and educate, not indoctrinate. I don't think indoctrination is good. I'm supposed to educate you and teach you as much as I can, but in the end, it's you that are going to learn. It's you that are the ones who are going to, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think our role as professionals, whether you're a teacher or a private practice dentist, is to be bridge builders. Yeah, build a bridge for the guy coming behind you.
Right, I love that.
Okay, so I'm not talking about 3-unit bridges, by the way.
Marco, do you have any more questions for Dr. Reed?
I think if we're going to close up here, I just want to know, like, a crazy story or a funny story.
a
wild patient, just... I mean, we talked about Clayton snapping his tooth. Yeah. That's a fun story.
Surely
we have.
Something has happened.
There's got, yeah.
To you. Let me tell you this one story. And I was not even a faculty yet. I was an implant fellow, if I'm not mistaken. No, maybe I was a resident. One of them, too. So this third-year dental student is coming down short on his requirements, okay, and his removable requirements. And the thing is that he had a denture patient. I think I was a resident. He had a denture patient. He had to deliver a denture on a specific date because that was it. No more time. And the guy was my friend. And he comes to me and says, hey, Jonathan, can you help me out with this? Can you help me process this? Because I don't have enough time to send it to the lab. And of course, there your little teacher instinct comes out. And he say, absolutely. You know, we're going to come on the weekend and you're going to process it. I'll teach you how to do it. Okay, so we come on the weekend and... this guy is has his dentures. We flask them. When you do a denture, you have to put them in, imagine, I don't know, encase it in stone to a certain degree. But you're supposed to be able to separate both lids of the flask. And one of them is going to have the teeth, and the other one is going to have the patient's mouth, a cast, okay? And then there's going to be a space. That's where we had put wax on, and wax melted off after you put it in hot water. So this kid... we flask it, okay? It's Sunday afternoon, and he's gonna deliver it Monday morning, okay? And this is last two days of clinic for delivery and 24-hour adjustment. So we come Sunday afternoon, we finish flasking, we put it into the boil out tank to melt the wax, deflask it, and he puts it right on the boil out tank, like right outside, okay? The table around it is very hot because this is steaming water. Okay, so we start doing all the things, right? And I tell him, hey, can you let me know where things are? And he's like, yeah, they're right there. And I go and I grab the flask.
Oh, no.
And when I grabbed the flask, the wax had melted and it was stuck to the table. But it caused enough pressure that when I pulled it off, it slipped off my hands. And I'm seeing this flask roll in the air. And I saw this like the Matrix, like almost in slow motion. And I'm seeing this kid turn green like his scrub, literally green. And I'm saying, oh my God, I just messed this guy up. Oh Lord. Thing falls to the floor. I just see a whole bunch of teeth fly. Now he's not green, he's pale, almost fainting. At that moment, I felt so bad. We start looking for the teeth. We find every single tooth. The thing didn't break. We found every single one of them except the front tooth. One of the front teeth. And at that moment, that's Sunday, 6 p.m., the patient's coming at 9 a.m. the next day or something like that. And I say, what do we do? So I tell him, okay, let's just process it. The denture had one pink tooth because of the space was going to be filled with pink acrylic because there was no tooth right there. You guys are going to understand this and when you guys get to finish your denture setup and all that stuff. Okay? The next morning, the student came in very early in the morning, went to Central Lab with Mr. Suleiman. He ground down the pink tooth off and put in a tooth, and this kid delivered his dentures right on time.
Oh, man.
That's not a funny story, but it's one of those stories that I'll remember for a very long time for sure.
I'm imagining the patient here, too. They just show up.
They have
up.
No idea.
They have no idea what's happened. They're just excited to get their denture.
And this is why one great message that I always like to give students and dentists that I go to share some of our experiences is always give the value to the people that are behind the curtains. In this profession, sometimes we think we're the doctors. No, we're the team. We're part of the team, and your assistant, your front desk person, your office manager, and your lab team, they're at the same level as you are, because the one day one of them is not there, the whole system crumbles.
Right.
The whole system crumbles.
That was a big piece of advice we got when we started dental school. They said, make friends with the lab techs that are in Morph with you, because they will walk you through it and they will help you in ways that you couldn't even imagine.
Not only labs, everybody, your assistant, everybody, your peers, everybody. And because we're not an island. We depend on others to be able to be successful.
Right.
And you're just one little piece of the puzzle. One little piece.
Absolutely.
You're the one who gives the face to the patient. You say, okay, here it is. But a lot of work is done
behind the scenes.
The scenes, that it's not you, it's other people too, right?
Right.
That's an awesome interview.
That was amazing. No, I don't. I
feel inspired. I want to go like
run. I know, seriously. So right now. I'm going to wax a canine right now or something.
don't be that.
Anything else you want to say, Dr. Eagle?
No, I'll just, to the pre-dental students, guys, it's a fantastic career. And the greatest thing is the relationship you get to build with patients. And that if you do it with a lot of passion and love, you're going to be so thankful that you got into this career, because patients are going to be thankful to you. And that's the biggest reward in the end, being able to help others. For sure. It makes a good day for you once you have a patient that is satisfied and is thankful and grateful for your help. And for you guys, as students, you know what I tell you guys. Work hard and have fun when you do it, because it's the only way you guys are going to be able to cherish your dental school years like you're supposed to, right?
Right.
And take advantage of every single minute you're here. And guess what? COVID is just one little hurdle.
Right.
And we got locked up for a few months. But like I said, those few months were probably one of the most productive months for me. In my house, I was working on so many things that I could not do in the building. So when things like this happen, we should not look at the downside, but look at the positive aspects of things. Say, okay, I don't have this, but now I can do this other things. And like anything, right? People that invest in the stock market, they don't they don't buy when it's great and expensive, right?
Right.
They buy when it's kind of low, and they don't sell when it's low, right?
Right.
Same thing for us as professionals in any career path. When things come down, we always have to look at this as a period of opportunity to a certain degree, whether it is to enrich our knowledge or to basically become better at something, perhaps waxing and practicing or, I don't know, gaining another ability to do something maybe unrelated to dentistry. Yeah. Who knows? You never know.
Right.
You never know.
I think if there's any pre-dent out there right now that was on the fence about going to dentistry, I think you probably just convinced them to become a dentist. So I think this was a great interview, and thank you again. Thank you so much for being here to do this.
Thank you for the opportunity, guys.
Absolutely. So without further ado, this has been your host, Marco.
And this has been your host, Clayton.
And you've been listening to the Pre-Dental Podcast.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Boom.